Welcome back to the Policy Viz podcast. I'm your host, John Schwabish. On this week's episode, I'm very pleased to be joined by co-founder and head of visualization at Periscopic Studios in Portland, Kim Reese, the one and only. Kim, welcome to the show.
Thank you, John. It's a pleasure to be on the show. Great. Love your show, by the way.
Thank you very much. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. It's a sunny day here in Portland. So
nice. Well, fall is treating you well so far?
So far, so good.
All right, good. So I thought we would chat a little bit, kind of open-ended on this episode. I thought we'd chat sort of about the future of data visualization and what you and maybe some folks over there at Periscopic are thinking about when it comes to new technologies, new platforms, whether it be mobile or tactile things or sound. So what are you thinking about these days in terms of the future of data viz?
Yes, that's a fun area to start thinking about. You know, it's something that we've been thinking about for a while. You know, in our house, we got an Alexa, or, you know, we call it an Alexa when it's actually an Echo, but
no, it's Alexa. I wouldn't even say it's Alexa. Alexa. It's just Alexa.
Siri is now Alexa to us.
So right.
We call everything Alexa.
Right.
Just randomly call people Alexa.
Well, we just yell at people on the street, Alexa.
Alexa. Where's the
I will say there is a third grader at my kid's bus stop whose name is Alexa, and I ask her for the weather and the square root of 234, and she doesn't know. So beware out there. If your name's Alexa, I may ask you questions that you don't know the answers to.
That's random.
Yeah.
Awesome. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, it's fascinating to look at these technologies that are now, you know, assisting us in various ways. And, you know, as data visualizer, it's, you know, I think about it a lot and where, you know, where is the stuff going and why do we, you know, why do we even need visualization these days? What is the point of it? Are we getting beyond visualization? Have we moved past the need for it? You know, and I think that things like not only voice assistants, but things like AI and machine learning are now sort of, you know, jumping into a realm where, you know, people might skip over data viz and go right into like a heavier type of analysis to find those insights that they need. So it's something we've been thinking a lot about. But I think that there's a space for maybe a new way to start thinking about visualization. And it's something that I've been calling, just in my own terminology, I've been calling it just in time visualization or just in time data, which is meant to sort of encompass all of those various of data services. And it's something that it's sort of, I think, is sort of a natural extension of that sort of that mobile first mantra that, you know, people have been championing for a long time. Mm-hmm. You know, mobile first, but now it's really like, you know, it's not mobile first. I don't often go to my phone to find things out. I go to Alexa. I'm standing there. Mm-hmm. I'm washing dishes or I'm getting my kids ready for school or what have you. I don't have the time to go to my
phone, right?
How absurd that sounds, but, you know, so I think that now it's, you know, the data needs to come to us wherever we are. So it's things like Alexa, things like in-car services, heads-up display, you know, things like, you know, I was even talking to someone recently about credit cards and how, you know, why should I have to go to my phone to check my balance or, you know, balances of my various cards or things. If I find, you know, like right now I'm on the search for a rain jacket because this is that time of year in Portland. So, you know, when I'm looking at different raincoats, you know, should I buy the $120 coat or can I go for the $150? Why can't I just hold my credit card up to the tag on the coat and see a visualization of like, okay, this is going to like put you close to your limit or this is going to, hey, Kim, you have an electricity bill coming up at the end of the month. You know, don't forget about that. You know, I shouldn't have to go and check, you know, my credit card balance and my banking balance and all these things. It should, you know, we need to start thinking about delivering those services at the time when people are in need of that data.
Yeah, so it sounds like not so much that data visualization is not needed, but that the current ways it's being delivered is maybe not needed. So Alexa that would have a visual display might be the next thing. You know, if you want to see, you know, what the weather is, you can see the wheat, you know, you can actually see the visuals in addition to her telling it to you via sound.
Right, right, exactly. And I think there, you know, I think there's room for what I'm, I guess what I'm trying to think more about is, you know, not so much trying to force things into a visualization as to say, okay, how can this data be serving people? Is it voice assistant? Is it visualization? Is it something they don't even need to see, right? Mm-hmm. Like, so for instance, this is one that I've brought up before, but I think it's a good example. So Amber Alerts, right? Mm-hmm. So when a child's abducted and they send out an Amber Alert, the alert gets pushed via text message to your phones. I guess the idea is, if I'm driving down the road, I get a text message, which I should not read, but I read it anyway, of course, you know, and it's, so it's an Amber Alert, comes up with the make and model of the car and the license plate. So now I'm driving around on the freeway looking for a blue Kia with a license plate of, you know, 457FFF, you know, whatever. Trying not to get into a car accident while I'm frantically looking around for this, you know, poor abducted child. Which is like like a nice try, I think, like an interesting attempt, but such a massive failure in practice. So to me, it's like, well, that problem is like, of course, that's, you know, as a mother, that's like, oh my God, that's such a great thing to solve. We need to solve this. So it you know, caused me to think about it for a time. And you know, I think... you know, we need to start thinking about how do we make technology do that work for us, right? That is, you know, humans, one, are just fallible, period. And then two, trying to put people into a fast-moving car and make them do some task like that is like a disaster waiting to happen.
Yeah.
But, like, why not use the car itself that has a, you know, backup camera that can be turned on? It can do pattern recognition. It can be looking for license plates, right?
Yeah.
I don't need to know anything about it. I don't need to know that there's an Amber Alert or anything, you know? So thinking about how can data serve us in those different ways and what are the, you know, with so much technology out there and new ways of using it and new systems and new, you know, new technology in cars and our phones and crazy devices and sensors, you know, let's start thinking about, you know, sometimes there doesn't even need to be a human in the loop of making these things happen. So, you know, it might be data viz, it might be voice assistant, it might be a data service that's, you know, works with sensors on my person that help deliver, you know, messages to me in various ways. You know, there was an incident that I was thinking about recently where I almost ran out of gas on the freeway.
An incident. When the orange light comes on, that's when it's time to get
gas. That is when it's time to get gas. But
for those of us who've grown up in cold weather climates, you fill up the tank when you get to half a tank. That's when you fill up. That's the time to fill up. Half is low. Half is low. When you grow up in a snow climate, go ahead. Yeah, now the light comes on.
No, yeah. So that's good. I should listen to that one. So for my incident though, so I wait until my gas runs out because then you have fresh gas, right?
The whole tank has fresh gas.
Exactly.
Okay, that's
nice.
Fresh, I now understand clean. The logic. I've never understood it before. Now I get it. The whole tank is fresh and it's clean. Okay. Right.
Gosh, I can't believe I'm revealing this to the world. but the problem was my light came on.
Right.
And I was within a half a mile of my favorite gas station, right? So I was just going to hop on the freeway and hop off and get my gas. Well, I didn't realize there was a six-car pileup on the freeway.
There it is.
So, Yeah. But it made me think in those moments of terror of running out of gas right behind the 6-car pileup, that why couldn't my car tell me, it knew where I was. It knew it was low on gas. It knows that I always try to go to that gas station. It can make some inferences about it looks like you're kind of headed toward the freeway. And I kind of know more about what's happening on the freeway than you do. So, a heads up would have been nice. Like, hey, Kim,
See, it would have been nice. I think, 100 miles earlier, had the car been look, the light's going to go on. But you don't need to wait until the light goes on. No, I see what you're saying. But still, I mean, I don't know about your car, but in my car, there's a little gauge, and there's an F at the top, and there's a G at the bottom.
Okay, you're taking the long
view. No, I'm taking the long view. No,
the education route.
I see what you're saying. Let's just take the sort of work that you guys do at Periscopic. The project you did on the polar bears, the project you did on gun deaths, the project you did on salmon. I mean, those are sort of, maybe that's sort of thinking a little more mainstream data viz, as it were. Should people who are doing that sort of work or just making, charts for the reports, should they be trying to think about the new technologies and where, maybe that's not what they're going to be doing, but how they want to sort of in 10, 5, 10, 15 years, how they want to communicate their regular charts and their dashboards?
I think so. I think that things like Alexa have a lot of utility that people may not be thinking about.
Mm-hmm.
And it's tough. That is a tough translation to do from visual to voice. It's a completely different animal. But I think people should really start thinking about what am I trying to convey? What kinds of things are people interested in? A lot of the election coverage, all of that stuff, a lot of that could be voice,
mm-hmm.
And you just ask Alexa what's
right.
I don't even want to bring up some of the examples, but I think that, polling, obviously, and that's on there. But I think that, in any sort of realm that you're working in, if it's something that people are looking at every day, especially with dashboards, those types of things are meant to be used every day.
Yeah.
If you can say, hey, what's, if I'm getting ready for work and I just want to see what's trending today or what kind of anomalies are out there that I need to be prepared for as I go into work and things I can start thinking about. Absolutely. I think that we should be trying to help people because, the users aren't going to come up with that themselves.
Right.
We need to sort of help bridge that gap as we're trying to help them with these data services.
Right, right, right. Yeah, I can imagine the Bloomberg terminal sort of thing where it's a little more voice activated as opposed to 6 screens where you're sort of trying to parse it.
Exactly.
I also want to look forward a little bit and get your thoughts on critique in the field. There's, more and more projects. The Makeover Monday project that Andy Kotgreve and Andy Kriebel have done over the past year sort of got a lot of attention. Rightfully, positive attention, I think rightfully so. And I'm wondering what you think about the sort of current state of critique and discussion in the field. Do you think it's going down the right path? Does there need to be sort of different things going on? Are we not talking about the right things? I mean, are we too stuck on zero baselines and pie charts? It's just time to move on already?
Wow, that's a lot.
Well, I like to narrow the questions into the biggest things.
Good for you.
It makes it easy on my guests, I think.
Absolutely. So I think there's always room for the zero baselines and the pie charts and all that stuff. I think data literacy is something that as visualizers we don't really realize how bad it is sometimes because we're immersed in it and we know it and we are constantly improving on it. And we sometimes forget that the general public doesn't have that much of an interface with it. So I always always those reminders, I think, are always good. Always remind ourselves, too, that there are always people, newcomers to the field. There are always students who are trying to figure this stuff out. And the more we give them in that realm, the better. The space of critiques, I know that's such a contentious space. I mean, it's tough. It's tough to get a critique, of course, or a makeover. I think that they are vastly necessary, though. Mm-hmm. I think that they, one, doing a critique or a makeover of a visualization, first and foremost, for the person critiquing, they really have to think through the pieces of it, you know? Even if it's cursory, even if they don't take everything into consideration and obviously weren't a part of the full project and they don't know who the client was or any of the constraints, just going through that thought process is immensely valuable to the critiquer.
Mm-hmm.
We do, at Periscopic, we do a show and tell every Monday where we bring in, you know, everybody's allowed to throw things into the hopper and we look at them. And so there are some examples of really great visualizations, some really bad ones, some in-betweens, and we just talk about what's good and what's bad.
Yeah.
And it's a really, really valuable learning experience for everybody. You know, we have developers, designers, project managers, strategists, UX people, you know, every person comes at things with a different perspective. So the more you hear those different sides of the story, I think is, you know, all the better. Critiques, I think, sometimes get a bad rap. You weren't there from the start. You don't know what the constraints are. You don't know the time, right. You know, time or budget constraints or the, you know, layout or any, you know, the client was, you know, had demands or whatever. You know, there's all of those are, you know, those are valid reasons. But I don't think that we should say stop doing critiques or makeovers because, mm-hmm. you know, the things we get out of them are so valuable. It was Jonathan Coram of the New York Times. He gave a talk at, I want to say it was at Visualized. And he left this portion out of his talk, but he left it in his slides. And it was actually a critique of our gun visualization. And when I read through his slides, it was like so thoughtful. Mm-hmm. And the ideas that he had were so interesting that we actually went back and tried them out. I had our developer go back and implement some of his ideas. And they were really beautiful. I don't think they quite gave the same message, so we didn't actually publish it, but it was a really beautiful way of looking at it and, you know, opened our eyes up to, you know, just a different way of thinking about things. So I think it's really valuable to have those out there, especially for, you know, for students who are, or people who are coming to the field fresh, they can, you know, we have to give people, some credit and let them make their own decisions. Like, do I like the original or do I like the makeover? Or would I combine different things?
Right.
You know, it gives people another way of looking at things and to show, you know, that all of these things, there are so many choices that go into a visualization that, you know, really you could have a million different solutions to the same problem.
Yeah.
So
what I sort of find interesting about the whole thing about critique or makeovers is that they often tend to be on the final piece. And I think it'd be really interesting for people to be, I mean, so you have this little you have this process within Periscopic where you are critiquing each other, but I'm sure there are places where there's one or two people who would benefit from critique on a thing that they are working on from the, you know, have that conversation sort of wider. And, you know, I guess, you know, you just don't see that as much, I guess, because people, I mean, aside from any like data security constraints are, you know, they just don't want to put something out that's not done.
Right. Like, I think, you know, like your Help Me Viz blog was fantastic for that. I love that idea. So maybe it's something like that where it's more of
a draft.
It's or maybe there's like a way to make a private version of that where you're not exposing it to the world, but you have like a private way to share this with other experts and say like, hey, is this going down the right path?
Right,
and,
right.
You know, I think that we've worked that way with a few clients where, so for instance, there was a client we had that was trying to build out their data viz capabilities in-house. And so they would come to us and just sort of vet some of their ideas early on. So we worked as a consultant in that respect to give them, you know, guidance.
Yeah.
So I think that's valuable. I think that, you know, I think people should definitely reach out to others, and people are really willing to give feedback.
But the field also has like definite snark. I mean, the field, right? I mean, like, let's not fool ourselves. And I'm as guilty as this as anybody, but like, let's not fool ourselves that we tend to be like, what were you thinking? Ha ha ha! LOL. Emoji, emoji, emoji. And then some poor person is crying in their office.
Yes. Yeah. Yes, that's true. I mean, I'm definitely guilty of that.
I mean,
yes,
it's the way
I own up to it. It's, yeah, it's I mean, it's... There are times when you're like, really? That's...
Well, yeah. I mean, so there are times when it's blatant. Like, either blatantly trying to be misleading, or just blatantly, you know, there's something blatantly wrong. Either purposefully or not. And so maybe some snark is okay, but I think the fact that snark sort of seeps into a lot of the conversation, I would guess, turns a lot of people off from being like, ooh, I have this thing, I'm not really sure if I'm the right path, I'm going to put it on Twitter and see what people suggest. And
I would not recommend putting it on Twitter. don't use that as your go-to guidance. Unless you have really thick skin.
Right.
But I think that if you reach out to people professionally and just ask them, people are much less.
I mean, it's certainly true.
You know, it's much easier to be snarky on Twitter. You know.
Well, it's certainly true in my case. I mean, one of the first projects that I did, I emailed to you. I mean, when I first started, I was like, ooh, I'm going to ask.
And I said, LOL, are you kidding me?
A big donut chart. That's crazy. With an emoji in the middle? No. Okay. Yeah. No. No. Okay. So that is probably true, that the snark sort of is toned way down when it's one-on-one as opposed to the world writ large.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. I think, and people are happy to help out generally, unless they're very busy, in which case people shouldn't take that personally,
right,
you know,
right,
and just, you know, try someone else.
Yeah.
You know, I think reaching out to other people getting started out too is often a good way to go about it. I know that when we were starting out, we looked to our peers a lot to see, just sort of get a gut check.
Yeah. Okay, I want to talk about one more sort of future-looking thing. We've talked about the future of technology, I guess, and sort of critiques and makeovers. You guys at Periscopic do a lot of work on sort of socially conscious issues, the gun viz death that everybody knows, the polar bears and the salmon thing and the terrorism thing. And I'm curious where you are standing right now, especially in a time period. We have a fairly contentious presidential election. We have, you know, situations around the world like in Aleppo and Syria that are serious and often sort of horrific and depressing. I'm sort of curious where you sort of stand right now on the relationship between visualizing data and the emotion that comes through in talking to people and maybe showing images. I'm just sort of curious where your thoughts are evolving or you have new thoughts on that sort of relationship between the two.
Right. I think so. Finding the, you know, the humanness, the humanity, the empathy for the data is something that is an undercurrent with us. It's always part of our goal is to sort of, you know, reach some level of empathy. I think one of my mantras is to, you know, to respect the atom of data. So whatever your individual piece of data, look at one row of your data. Is it a person? Is it an animal? Is it a, you know, whatever it is, respect that thing, respect that entity. And, you know, and sometimes look back before the data. You know, I think a lot of people just start with a spreadsheet or their database or whatnot and go from there. And it's just, they start with numbers and it's really devoid of any sort of humanness. My mantra is always, you know, go back to that atom of data, go back to before that. Where did that data come from? Who are we talking about? What's behind this? And really respect that. You know, I think a lot of people sort of see, you know, they're communicating numbers and therefore they should be as, you know, impartial as possible. But to me, that's sort of missing the whole point of why you're visualizing anything in the first place. Mm-hmm. You know, it's sort of like the goal is to understand what it is you're communicating. And if you are putting it in a chart, then that essence should be in the chart. Mm-hmm. You know, if you're doing it with a story, you're going to use a, you know, you might use a photograph. That's a photograph is full of emotion.
Right.
You're not just going to, you know, take a photograph of a number and put it on there. I mean, we have to look at other ways that people are communicating things. So, like, I think that journalism is a great example where people are afraid to put emotion into their visualizations, their charts, because they're meant to be seen as this sort of impartial, objective reporting, mm-hmm. when in fact, every article you read, it's full of stories, personal mm-hmm. accounts, people, images, photographs, you know, and somehow, yeah. why aren't they held to that same sort of rigor of like, well, let's take out every sort of hint of emotion or empathy.
Right. So practically you would say you have an article on your, you know, whatever, you're in the newspaper, you write an article on Syria, you write an article on Aleppo, it has the interviews, has the pictures. You're arguing on the dativist side, there's a graph that to practically sort of input the emotion or the narrative into the graph would be what? Would it be, you know, a more emotive title or annotation, or is it imagery on the graph? Like practically when people are thinking about how do I take my line chart of the unemployment rate with this report, like how do I make that, like how do I get people to connect with that more, right? Maybe the unemployment rate's a bad example, but you right. know what it's right, like...
Yeah, so maybe it's not a chart about unemployment. Maybe right. it's something deeper, and it's something mm-hmm. that's not. I think a lot of times we get stuck with what's in front of us in the data, and we sometimes have to look at, like, well, what isn't being yeah. said in this, you know? Yeah. It's not just a chart of numbers of people who are unemployed. It's like, what does that actually mean? Does that mean more people are homeless? Does that mean more people can't afford to pay for, you know, food for their kids to eat, you know, like if there's more behind it than just a number of people unemployed, yeah. which is sort of like, if there's no emotion in it, then there's no emotion in it to be mm-hmm. had. But if there's no emotion in something that you clearly know is emotional, then I think you need to dig a little deeper yeah. to find what, you know, why we should care about the unemployment rate.
Right.
You know?
Right.
I mean, I may think being unemployed would be freaking awesome because I could just sit around and do nothing, you know, and that'd be fantastic. But, you know, I don't think that's quite what they're trying to get at.
yeah, probably not. But, you know, I think you're thinking more of a vacation. That's, yeah. Which has its own sort of emotion with it. But, yeah, I see what you're saying, that people, they're looking at the topic of what they're writing about or what they're showing, but not scratching below that surface.
Right. Here's a really good example. So we recently did a project about salmon, right? And this client came to us with tons of charts that they had already done, right? And we went through them and there was one that was just like, what is this? Why is this a chart? What does it mean? It just like vexed me to no end. It was about when... Oh, God. So it was like, okay, these are scientists, so bear with me.
so it was, prepare yourselves, everyone.
It was charting I forget what they call it. It was like a sort of one type of fish that was like the popular fish, if you will.
Sure. Okay. All right, the popular fish.
Popular.
I have an image of a middle school cafeteria right now, by the way.
He wears a leather jacket.
Right.
Got that cool hairdo.
He's got his jeans are cuffed and pinned together.
Exactly.
I'm gonna date myself a little bit.
Yeah.
All right, the cool fish. Got him.
The cool fish.
Cool fish.
So they were charting this fish, and when... like the time of year that this fish was swimming back to its spawning ground in this river, The whole visualization was based on this one river, right? Mm-hmm. So here's the popular fish, and here's when it's swimming back to its... So you can imagine sort of this normal distribution of when, you know, around, you know, July 1st or whatever.
Gotcha.
Of this fish swimming back to its spawning ground, right? So this is a popular fish. Now, being the popular fish, it's also the most fished fish.
Uh-huh, right. Right? Yeah.
So the fisher people come out and fish for this fish. So the problem is, now that's fine because this popular fish is popular because there's a lot of this fish, mm-hmm. right? And they do what's called enhancing the population, which is fish farmers add more of this fish to the stock, right?
Okay.
So it's a farmed fish, basically. Very popular. People like to fish for it. So it basically, by charting when this fish is swimming, it's sort of a proxy for when people come and fish, right?
Mm-hmm.
Where they come to fish on this river. And so, but the problem is there are tons of other salmon that also have to swim through this river. And lots of little, like, subspecies of salmon have to swim through this river during this fishing season. And so the problem is that you have some populations of these fish that have only 500 fish left,
mm-hmm.
or 293 fish left, you know, like really, really tiny populations, right? So when they came to us, they had showed us a chart of just overlapping when these different fish were migrating, mm-hmm. right? So when you look at when the fish are migrating, you're like, oh, you know, that's okay. This one fish is sort of like on the tail end of this other popular fish. So
right.
Whatever, it's all good. But what they didn't show in the chart was the actual numbers of these fish,
yeah.
right? So the popular fish is like, I don't know, 14 million or something. And then some of these other populations of like 293, they're
right.
barely, you can, they're just a little tiny blip along the bottom of this chart. And when you put those, the actual numbers together, along with the timing, you can very quickly see, oh, this fish could become extinct in one fishing season,
right?
So it's a matter of taking, like, what is the goal? What am I trying to say? And this may be vastly important, you know, saving a species of fish. Like, how do I say that in an image? You know, and sometimes it's not the data that you're looking at that's mm-hmm. just coming straight out of your database. Sometimes you have to think about, how can I get this across to somebody? How can I show this? And that image that we made was simply like a bar chart side by side.
Mm-hmm.
But once you see it, you're like, oh my God,
right.
this, you know, it just, it's not like you don't have to put a dead fish up there to make it emotional.
Yeah.
You know, it's just like, just the seeing
numbers,
the numbers.
The numbers, yeah. You know, it's interesting. Yeah. You kind of touched on two things there. One is a sort of the idea of digging deeper and finding the story behind the story. But you also sort of mentioned there are two charts. And I often feel like people forget that it doesn't always have to be packed into like one chart, that two charts often work best because you get the story that you just told, where you get these two aspects of things. You get the
right.
level and the change or whatever it is. But
right. Yeah. It's always, you know, you have to go through the work of doing it. I mean, I think people sometimes forget like how many iterations of things it takes to get the idea. Sean Carter gave a talk a long time ago about one of the New York Times visualizations, and I forget what one it was, but I think it was like many roads to the White House or something. And he showed all of the iterations that they had pushed to GitHub, and it was literally like the first three iterations were vastly different, but once they got to the third one and it was sort of like the golden nugget, then like the rest, the litany of iterations, which is like tiny little play with this, play with that, try different things within
right.
that same, those constraints. And I think that people forget like, oh, once you have the idea, you're not even close to being done.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know?
Yeah.
And now you have to do the actual work of figuring out what does convey that information in the right way,
right.
in the most impactful way.
Good. Well, on that note of being impactful, pulling it all together. Kim, I thank you for coming on the show. This has been, as always, it's been fun chatting with you.
As always, John, I wish we could do it more. This was fantastic. Thank you so much for having me on.
Well, thank you for chatting with me, and thanks to all of you for tuning in to this week's episode. So until next time, this has been the Policy of This podcast. Thanks again for listening.